Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I graduated from West Point in June of 1964. My class will have its 60th reunion this spring. My time at West Point really confirmed and made solid in my life the values that have led me through my whole life. As cadets, we agreed that we would not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. The honor code was enforced by we cadets, and occasionally a cadet would be discharged for violation. But that code has been greatly modified, and it's not run by the cadets anymore, but by the cadre. And the motto at West Point was duty, honor, country. That's been a part of my life. It's who I am. And it was just announced that West Point is abandoning this simple yet strong set of values for some long list of good things. My alma mater embraces critical race theory and other woke values that certainly do not train cadets to be ready to lead combat or to defend our nation. I fear that West Point has lost its values, and that really hurts. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Are you doing any hunting this season, Skip?
Actually, Colonel, I am, and you just, you know, hit the nail on the head there. I'm hunting for duty, honor, and country. I can't find my country anymore. I don't recognize it. And boy, I don't recognize West Point at all. Duty and honor? Why would they get rid of something like that?
I think you'd have to look in the White House for leadership and direction.
I think you're right. You're right.
And some of our senior uniform leaders are tolerating it and not fighting it. Anyway, that's where we are. Okay, here's what we have for you today. On news and comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss the possible terrorist attacks in our nation conducted by the illegals we have and are continuing to let into this country. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Next, we'll discuss the dedication of the World War I Memorial with General Flynn and sculptor Sabin Howard. Former Green Beret Scott Venema will share his story. Adam Lalonde will discuss getting America food independent. And General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. Oh, by the way, troops, this Monday is Medal of Honor Day. We salute all those brave men who have served our nation with such courage. God bless each of them. Okay, now the news. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, as daylight begins to fade at an abandoned illegal immigrant camp in Mexico at the border wall near California, San Diego County, a couple of Mexican soldiers armed with assault rifles patrol the rocky terrain in the hills above. Below them, white tents along the Mexican side of the border wall signal the army presence as Mexican National Guard troops pull up in a truck. They arrived in early February. On February 29, a Mexican soldier hid behind a rock as he realized reporters had seen him on the U.S. side of the border. Several moments later, he ducked back under the barbed wire fence into Mexico. A National Border Patrol Council spokesman in San Diego said usually an incursion by the Mexican military is directly reported to headquarters and the White House is notified. It's obvious that the soldier was on U.S. soil.
So, not only are illegal aliens ignoring our border, but the Mexican army is too. That's reasonable as the border is wide open. It's also the perfect situation for a disaster here in our nation.
And American missionaries abandoned in Haiti pleaded for rescue as constant violence tore the country apart. The group's leader, Jill Dolan, said the only assistance they have received from our government was advice to be safe. Quote, what they say is, be safe. I'm just like, my fear is that we will be caught up in the middle of something really dangerous, Dolan said. We're already on the front lines of it. We're in a bad area. It's depressing. The gunfire never stops, unquote. According to the New York Post, Dolan and her family are trapped in Haiti at a makeshift motel in the capital, Port-au-Prince, where most of the violence has been concentrated. Dolan and her family founded Love a Neighbor, a nonprofit missionary charity in Washington State to help manage a small orphanage for children abandoned or sold by their impoverished parents. Dolan said she was on her way out of Haiti to attend a wedding in Florida with her husband and adopted teenage children when gangs attacked the airport, causing all commercial flights to be canceled. Quote, nobody's reached out to us or anything. And then, of course, when we saw that non-essential workers get picked up, we were thinking, well, maybe they're going to come back and start evacuating Port-au-Prince and then have a plane for everyone else. But they didn't.
Our government did evacuate all the non-essential workers at the embassy, and they've chartered airplanes to fly thousands of illegal aliens from all over South America into our nation, avoiding our border patrol, which is illegal, but they couldn't get around to evacuating American citizens, something that our nation does regularly in crisis situations like this? Wow.
All the planes are busy in Central and South America, Colonel. That's what it is.
Oh, likely.
And the Pentagon is seeking low-cost AI drones to bolster our Air Force.
Based on the drone usage we've seen in Israel and Ukraine, I'd say that's a good idea.
And Harold Terrence and his fiancée, Jean Swerlin, who are both widowed, kissed and held hands like high school sweethearts as they discussed their upcoming wedding in France, a country the World War II veteran first visited as a 20-year-old Army Air Force corporal shortly after D-Day in 1944. Terrence, a gregarious and energetic 100-year-old, oh, Colonel, if we could only be energetic and gregarious at 100 years old.
Amen.
He will be honored in June by the French as part of the 80th anniversary celebration of their country's liberation from the Nazis. Then he plans to marry the sprightly 96-year-old Swerlin in a town near the beaches where our troops landed.
Frontlines of Freedom salutes these two youngsters as they celebrate our nation's role in the victory of World War II and get married. This is awesome.
And our National Guard has really been abused, given jobs to do that have nothing to do with protecting their state or our nation. Like when President Biden was considering using them to work in California ports, unloading ships and driving trucks. In 2021 in Massachusetts, they were used to drive school buses to get kids to school. During COVID in New York, they were sent in to act as healthcare workers and spend most of their time sitting around idle. That happened in Ohio, too. In Philly, the mayor wanted them to come in and clean up the city's open-air drug markets, despite the fact that the markets existed because of the mayor's policies promoting them. And in D.C., the mayor wanted them to control the illegal migrants whom she had invited in.
You know, calling up the guard isn't free. It's much more expensive to call up the guard than to, say, paid bus drivers. The bus drivers get paid by the hour. The guards get a salary. And guardsmen have jobs and can't afford to be jerked out of their jobs just because some politician didn't plan ahead. They joined the Guard to protect us, and they shouldn't be abused.
And the program that allows Afghan allies to immigrate to the U.S. is in danger of running out of visas this summer as approving more of the visas becomes a sticking point in Congress negotiations over an upcoming government funding bill. Supporters of the State Department-run Special Immigrant Visa, or SIV, program are pushing to include 20,000 visas in the bill being negotiated now to fund about half of the federal government for the rest of fiscal 2024. There have been credible reports of hundreds of Afghans killed while waiting for the SIV application to be processed. The Afghan SIV program was created in 2009 to give Afghans who served as interpreters for our military, as well as their family members, a path to escape Taliban threats to their lives and resettle here.
We're letting millions of illegals just come into our country, but these people who helped our military aren't being welcomed? This is nonsense. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well run on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a veteran, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. We all have to be active right now. We really do. Check CVAfrontlines.com. That's CVAfrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Coming up, I'll share comments by the Colonel. Then we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll discuss the dedication of the World War I Memorial. At ease, troops. Take a break. In business for over 30 years with over $1 billion in sales, Universal Coin and Bullion is my go-to source for gold and silver coins. And right now, they're offering our listeners a newly minted 0.99 fine 1 ounce 2024 silver American Eagle coin for just $27. Call 800-UCB-GOLD, 800-UCB-GOLD, or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your home defense tip of the week. A loyal dog can be a useful force multiplier when it comes to home defense. They have keen hearing and sense of smell and will likely sense danger before their human counterparts. A large, obedient, and well-trained dog can deter and even delay an attacker, giving you time to get to your gun. Even a small dog will provide advanced warning and possibly save the lives of yourselves and the ones you love. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Troops, even if our economy wasn't a mess, with inflation going crazy and prices going up out of sight, I'd still recommend you do some investing in precious metals, gold and silver. I encourage you to join me in purchasing these solid investments from Universal Coin and Bullion. Find them at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. No news here. Our nation has wide open southern borders, northern border too, and we now have millions of illegals here. A significant number of them are very likely enemies of our nation who are here to attack us. Can you even begin to comprehend the savagery, horrors, and bloody carnage that may well be unleashed here by hundreds of thousands of Chinese communist military personnel, Iran terror cells, the radical Islamic Hamas, Hezbollah, and Al-Qaeda terrorists, communist Cubans, and Venezuelan communists who have invaded our nation because of Obama's 3-year open border policy? Such a future planned attack here will be more vicious than last year's surprise attack in Israel by Hamas radical terrorists. Is there a plan to do this? Well, such as a plan is right out of Unrestricted Warfare, a 1999 book written by two communist Chinese Air Force colonels that the Chinese Communist Party says they're planning to execute within the United States. It will kill and subjugate millions of American citizens, employing the communist Chinese army and its allies that has invaded the country over the past 3 years. That Unrestricted Warfare plan to kill and subjugate Americans was first published in 1999 in Beijing. This encourages the CCP to employ the very offensive military tactics to kill and subjugate American citizens in the United States. The CCP has been telling the Chinese people for 3 years that communist China is at war with us. Iran, the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world, who declared war on us in 1979, is a CCP ally in the Unrestricted War plan to invade, attack, kill, and then subjugate the U.S. citizens. Iran has been killing and maiming American service members since it blew up the Beirut Marine Barracks in 1983. It continued killing our service members for 37 years by delivering roadside bombs manufactured in Iran to terrorists in the Taliban in Iraq and Afghanistan. Since September, in over 200 strikes, Iran terrorists have continued attacking and trying to kill U.S. military personnel in Syria and Iraq. The Obama administration had been openly supporting communist China and Iran's development of nuclear weapons since 2006. President Biden continued the massive financial aid support for Iran by eliminating our restriction on China and India from purchasing Iran's crude oil and by also transferring $16 billion to Iran in the last 6 months. That financial support has helped fund Iran's continued development of its nuclear weapons. Since 1979, Iran's long-term goal has been to attack and destroy Israel and the United States with nuclear-tipped missiles. Iran has since developed their long-range missiles, and they're close to developing nuclear weapons. During the past 3 years, Communist China apparently has invaded our nation with over 400,000 single military-age Chinese Communist Army personnel. Communist Chinese personnel continue to invade through these wide-open borders. Thousands of radical Islamic Hamas and Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, and Iranian terrorists, as well as Cuban communists and Venezuelan communists, have been invading through our wide-open borders. They will coordinate their operations with Communist China. The Communist Chinese military people and their allies are being armed from a large inventory and heavy automatic weapons shipped from Communist China to Mexico, which were smuggled into our country through the wide-open southern border by Mexican drug cartels. Normally, illegal aliens who enter our nation would be preoccupied with looking for their next meal, finding a place to live, and trying to find a way to earn a living. However, within weeks of migrating here, there are videos posted on X, Twitter, showing single military-aged Chinese illegal aliens involved in target practice, firing rifles and automatic weapons. One of the videos is of a Chinese military-aged female firing a sniper rifle. I think you know that the Biden administration has contracted jet passenger aircraft paid for by we taxpayers to operate secret night flights to overfly the border and the U.S. Border Patrol in transferring over 320,000 illegal aliens from Cuba, Haiti, Venezuela, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Colombia, and Ecuador to deliver the illegals directly to 43 U.S. cities. By avoiding the U.S. Border Patrol agents, this is clearly smuggling illegal aliens in. This is in violation and abetting U.S. federal immigration laws, trafficking illegal aliens. Someone should go to prison for the repeated continuous violation of our federal laws by smuggling those 320,000 illegal aliens into this nation. We Americans shouldn't wait until after the presidential election to take steps to mobilize support for the protection of fellow Americans. That may be too late, since enemies of the nations are inside the wire now. We should act now. Each of us is represented in Congress by a U.S. representative and 2 U.S. senators. All 3 should be contacted and asked to help mobilize action to protect and save American lives. The members of Congress should be encouraged to honor their oath of office and asked to contact the appropriate people in our executive branch to help put a stop to the invasion, to encourage military and law enforcement personnel to round up communist Chinese military personnel, radical Islamic terrorists, and foreign communist military personnel who have invaded our country. The members of Congress should let the members of our executive branch know that the Congress may use the power of the purse as a last resort to reduce their budgets if they don't take action to protect the lives of American citizens. And the monthly invasion across our wide-open southern borders of over 350,000 illegal aliens must be stopped. This attack may not happen, but why wouldn't it? And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
Well, if you've ever been to the Army and Air Force exchanges, you probably saw the large photo of an airman who was very excited to eat a hot dog. Well, his photo graced exchanges around the world, reminding American troops of what pure joy really looked like. In fact, for decades, his face even became military meme status. The man in the photo was retired Chief Master Sergeant Robin Williams, who was responsible for the safety of all the food that flowed through the Army-Air Force exchange systems around the world. Well, last week, at the age of 60 years old, he unfortunately passed away from a heart attack. And now he's being utilized by many military members who remember him for both his senior leadership and, of course, the exchange hot dog photo. Robin Lawrence Williams was born in London on November 4, 1963, and joined the Air Force in May 1983. He spent 30 years in the Air Force and retired in 2013 with a career that included multiple deployments supporting the global war on terrorism. His claim to fame of the hot dog guy came in 2004 when the exchange rolled out the Snack Street, and he was asked just to take a few photos. At the time, he had no idea his photo would be seen on exchanges across the world. Rest easy, Chief Master Sergeant. Enjoy those heavenly hot dogs. We have the watch. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Hey, thanks, Roland. I really appreciate your comments. Thanks, bro. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss our World War I memorial that will be dedicated later this summer. Then we'll meet former Green Beret Scott Venema. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for some wind sprints. Do them for a couple of miles, then stand at ease.
For over 10 years, Concerned Veterans for America has been fighting for better health care options for veterans.
Thanks to our thousands of activists around the country, we've been able to expand options for veterans who use the VA for their care.
But there is more to be done, and you can help. We need voices just like yours to call on Congress to continue reforming the VA and empowering veterans with more choice over their care.
Learn more and join the movement by visiting cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome back to the show General Michael Flynn. Our topic today is the about-to-be-dedicated World War I Memorial. But before we discuss this amazing sculpture, I'd like to discuss World War I and the need for the memorial. So thanks for joining us today, General. Give us an intro to this new memorial.
Yeah, absolutely, Denny, and thank you very much. Thanks for all that you're doing for our country. You know, we need more of you out there. So this is all about the National World War I Memorial, which does not exist of interest to your listeners. There is no National World War I Memorial in Washington, D.C., like we have Vietnam Memorial and the Korean Memorial and World War II, et cetera. So, and a little bit about my background, both of my grandfathers served in World War I. One was in the United States Navy and one was in the United States Army. My grandfather on my father's side was in the Army and was actually in the American sector. And just for early Christmas, before they really got into some heavy fighting, and they were involved in some heavy fighting at the time that they were there, he actually was missing in action for a period of time and then subsequently found wandering on the battlefield. And he had terrible post-traumatic stress from that war. My grandfather on my mother's side was a sailor in the northern seas there, in the Navy at the time, but he also was a World War II veteran. And so I have a long legacy of military in my family. Both my grandfathers, my father served in World War II and the Korean War. And of course, I have another older brother and I have another younger brother who my younger brother continues to serve. So our legacy of service to this country, you know, is well documented and maybe not as well known for your audience, but we've been at this for well over 100 and probably 40, 50 years now since my family came over from Ireland to the United States. So the National World War I Memorial, it's amazing. I've seen it. I've gotten to know the sculptor. The actual memorial is called A Soldier's Journey, and it has been years in the making, and it's going to serve as the centerpiece of the National World War I Memorial in Washington, D.C. This memorial tells a story, beautiful story, of an American reluctantly answering the call to war, as my grandfather did, a deeply personal and individual story, and really the grand symbolic story of the nation all in one beautiful, beautiful memorial, in one story, one the sculptor Sabin calls A Soldier's Journey. And it has five scenes, and it's 38 larger-than-life size human figures. It's nearly 60 feet long and 10 feet high. I have been to the mock memorial, and it's just absolutely beautiful. I've met many of the characters who are actually playing the roles of the particular people that sculptor Saben Howard has designed into it. It's just absolutely beautiful. And again, the master sculptor is Saben Howard. A Soldier's Journey, the memorial itself is poised to become the most significant memorial bronze of the modern age. And not only the way it was designed, the passion behind it, the compassion that makes it up, but also where I think we're going to see it placed as an embodiment of who we are as a nation at the end of Pennsylvania Avenue in the current Pershing Park. So as people tour Washington, D.C. and look at the various memorials, when they look at this memorial, directly behind it sits the Capitol of the United States of America. And I think it shows emblematic of the sacrifice that many gave in service to this country to protect our nation's republic. And I know that sacrifice is something that seems to never end. Much of the memorial was actually embronzed or created and constructed. It was designed actually in the United States of America. They had to send it over for additional work in England. The official U.S. unveiling is September 13th, 2024, General Pershing's birthday, and it's going to be in the current Pershing Park, just yards from the White House, as I explained. Kelsey Grammer, who I'm honored to stand alongside, Kelsey Grammer and myself are going to serve as the National World War I Memorial Spokespersons, and we're really honored to be able to do that. Now, we will be telling the stories of the past to really improve and better our future. And as we better our future, we're going to honor the past. Clearly, those men principally, but men and women who sacrificed in World War I to be able to give us what we have in this country today. Saben Howard's art is about the elevation of the human spirit. That's really what this is about, elevating the human spirit, and about human dignity at a time when the global elite communist movement globally is trying to destroy those values and demean the human dignity that we have come to expect here in the United States of America. So I'm very honored, Denny. Thank you so much for allowing me a few minutes with your audience. The National World War I Memorial will be unveiled in the United States of America, September 13, 2024. Myself and Kelsey Grammer will be the spokespersons for that. And the master sculptor, who I'm sure you'll hear from, and you know, Saben Howard, has done a magnificent job. So God bless you, Denny, and thank you very much for allowing me some time with your great audience.
General Flynn, thank you, sir. Giving that oversight, I'm sure Saben is going to do a fantastic job, but somebody who's been to combat gives a different perspective to these memorials. Thank you for offering that. God bless you, sir.
Absolutely. God bless. Thank you.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing our nation's World War I memorial. Now, let me give a quick overview of World War I. It was a global conflict fought between July 28, 1914 to 11 November 1918. There were two coalitions, the Allies and the Central Powers. The battles took place throughout Europe, the Middle East, Africa, the Pacific, and parts of Asia. It was one of the deadliest wars in history. It resulted in about 9 million soldiers dead, 23 million wounded, and 5 million civilian deaths. Increasing diplomatic tensions between the European great powers reached a breaking point on June 28, 1914, when a Bosnian Serb assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand, heir to the Austro-Hungarian throne. Austria-Hungary held Serbia responsible and declared war. Russia came to Serbia's defense, as did France and Britain, the Allies. Germany joined Austria-Hungary, as did the Ottoman Empire, the Central Powers. Germany's strategy was to defeat France first, then Russia. However, this failed, and then the Western Front resulted in a continuous line of trenches stretching across from the English Channel to Switzerland. The Eastern Front was more dynamic, but neither side gained a decisive advantage. In 1917, the Bolsheviks ceded power to Russia, and Russia dropped out of the war. Germany launched an offensive in the West, and despite initial successes, it left the German army exhausted and demoralized. A successful Allied counteroffensive caused a collapse of the German front line, and facing revolution at home and his army on the verge of mutiny, Kaiser Wilhelm II abdicated on the 9th of November. We declared war on Germany on April 16th, 1917, due to Germany's attack on our ships, because before entering the war, we remained neutral, although we had been an important supplier to the Allies. We made our major contributions with supplies, raw materials, and money starting in 1917. Our soldiers under General John Pershing, Commander-in-Chief of the Allied Expeditionary Force, arrived at a rate of 10,000 soldiers a day on the Western Front in the summer of 1918, and they made the difference. During the war, we mobilized over 4.7 million military personnel and suffered the loss of over 116,000 soldiers. A ceasefire and armistice were declared on November 11, 1918. There's more to discuss about World War I Memorial, and next we'll be talking with Master Sculptor Sabin Howard. Stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. It's time for push-ups. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do some days. And then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back. It's that time of the year again. The U.S. Mint is making their new 2024 American Silver Eagle and American Gold Eagle coins, and there's no better time to shore up your investment in precious metals than now. Call Universal Coin and Bullion at 800-UCB-GOLD to get great prices on the finest gold and silver coins of the year. I work with Universal Coin and Bullion because they're a company that you can trust. So give them a call at 800-UCB-GOLD. That's 800-UCB-GOLD, or check them out at universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S.-only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off, patriotfoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation on the subject of the World War I Memorial. The creator of this memorial is Master Sculptor Sabin Howard. He's known as the greatest living sculptor, America's Michelangelo. So, welcome to the show, Sabin. Thank you much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I have to live up to your introduction now.
Thank you. It's always a challenge, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, start with a bit of your background. How did you become a sculptor?
I have an interesting parenting. My mother is Italian, and my dad is from Philly. I was born in 63. So I like to say my hard drive is a combination of the visual splendor of the Renaissance in Italy, and also the thinking outside of the box of New York in the early 60s in the Vietnam era. And that really gave me some tools to be more creative and also think in a way that others don't. I'm very tied to my childhood and being shown all these classical, beautiful monuments, the piazzas and the cathedrals and the art of Milan in turn. And that had a huge impact on what I thought art should be. I didn't start making art till I was 19, however.
Okay. So you just grew up and, like most of the rest of us, we suddenly found ourselves doing something.
Yeah, I was basically a juvenile delinquent in high school, and I was lost. And then when I did find what I was supposed to do with my life at age 19, I was working in a furniture restoration shop making cabinets in South Philly for like $2.40 an hour. And I got hired on Monday, and by Thursday, I go to my boss and say, "Hey, man, I quit." And he was like, "Well, I'm not going to pay you." And of course, me being the gentleman that I was, I gave him the bird, flipped him the finger, and walked out the door. I went to the nearest payphone, called my dad, Collect, and said, "Hey, I quit. I'm going to be an artist. I'm going to art school." And he goes, "How long is this going to last?" My next phone call was to the Philadelphia College of Art, and I got in touch with the ladies at admission, and I said, "I really want to go to art school. How do we do this?" And she goes, "Well, you need to have a portfolio." And I said, "What is a portfolio?" And so she said, "Come on over. I'm free." So October 20th of 1982, and I talked to this lady there, and she goes, "You need to get a book called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain." and get that book and do the exercises in it and then come back to me. So I walked over to the Joseph Fox bookstore. It doesn't exist anymore. I got this book called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. And I go home, and that first night I set up a little thing in this corner of my studio apartment, and I start drawing. And it's like the most excruciating, difficult thing I'd ever done. But I'm hooked because I'm using a different part of my brain to perceive the reality. And I came back to that lady, the college, 3 months later, and I had 90 drawings. And she starts flipping through them, and she pulls 10 of them out and goes, "You're going to get in." And I said, "How the hell do you know that?" And she goes, "Well, I'm the director of admissions." So, that was the beginning. And I ended up in the figurative hotbed of the United States in Philadelphia at that point. I had really, really good instruction that came from an education based on traditional Renaissance figurative art. It's incredible. That doesn't exist anymore. And that information then was my ability to then be in a structured information type way of perceiving life models and translating them into art.
You know, I have no art ability, but I have enough knowledge to know what you said makes sense. And it was a path that nobody, I don't think, could stumble into. Somebody had to lead you there, and that one lady did it for you, right?
Yeah. I had no clue back in 1982 that even back in 1982, there was still the value of traditional art, representational art that spoke about sacred values. And I'm not saying religious, but secular sacred values, things that were of importance in a Western civilization type of world. Those were the things that were handed to me, those tools. And I had no idea that I was actually outside of the art narrative. And so now what are we? We're 40 years down the road, and I've built this 60-foot long 38-figure in a visual composition that's a visual narrative. It's not a conceptual idea thing. It's made for people to go and understand. You don't have to be in art to get it. And so then here I am, and I can't get a single bit of press because I'm outside of the art narrative. I'm speaking about something that is not to be distributed.
Wow. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. We're talking with Sabin Howard. So with that background, now take us to this fantastic World War I Memorial.
I appreciate that. This was a global competition held in 2015. There were 360 global design teams. It was a blind competition. And I didn't get selected in the initial stages, but I knew for some reason I was still in it. In September, I get this email from this young kid. He's 25 years old, Joe Weishar. He doesn't even have an architectural license. And he was one of the top five kids or people that got into the finals. We then go to a bunch of meetings with Centennial Commission led by this man, Edwin Fountain. And I knew right away we were going to win because Edwin said after our first meeting, "I really like the Schrady sculptures, the Grant Memorial in front of the Capitol." And so that's right up my alley. Now, I had to change my way of making art because my training was very Greco-Roman and more esoteric than what the public would think. So I would pose models on a dais. We would work on a piece for literally 1,500 hours, 2,000 hours, and then I would make multiple copies of that. That's how I ran my life before I got this project. So I changed my whole way of making art because I had to make something that was like really visceral, really dynamic, really emotional, and also make something that, you know, an eighth grader would understand because they're going to the United States Capitol to understand the history of our country. So I came up with this way of using the cell phone to take pictures of people in motion, acting out scenes in real life uniforms, 100-year-old uniforms in movement. And that was the impetus that really got this project off the ground.
Wow, this is amazing. And from that, you were able to put together in your mind what this monument would look like, right?
Yeah, it wasn't like I got there right away. So we got announced as the winners in 2016 in January. So this didn't happen like overnight. The first 9 months, I had to make all these iterations so Centennial Commission could then proceed into the government agencies like the Commission of Fine Arts. There was a very, very difficult time those first 9 months because I had 100 people whispering in my ear telling me what to do with all these different type of visions, like, okay, we want biplanes, we want horses, We want trenches. We want no man's land. Oh, how about you put a dog in there? So, and you got all these like sculptural geniuses all of a sudden coming out of Washington telling me what I should be doing. So I have this moment where I think it was the first 2 months in, and I go to the bathroom and I look above the urinal, and there I have this poster. It's a poster of Michelangelo's Last Judgment. It's in the Sistine Chapel, and it is this intertwining of all humanity, like the whole of humanity it's a pretzel, all advancing and receding into space, all there to meet their maker, because we are mortals. We are all going to die. And I realized at that moment, do what you know. Do what you've been studying for the last 35 years, sculpting human beings from life. And from that moment on, then it really started. And I did 18 iterations. Finally, in November of that year, I met Edwin at the Barnes & Noble at Union Square, and he gave me the okay to proceed with a drawing. That drawing then became a 700-hour chore that was then delivered in the spring of 2017 to the Commission of Fine Arts. And it began, because the Commission of Fine Arts is also another hurdle that you have to pass through. We were lucky enough to get through that in about a year and a half. Now, bear in mind, Eisenhower Memorial took 15 years to get through. We got through in a year and a half. It's kind of a miracle. I don't know how it happened, because we were blocked for a while. And then all of a sudden at one meeting, we passed through. And then I had to figure out, how much is this going to cost? How are we going to do it? And how long is it going to take? I had to go out into the whole world and find a place that could do this in a, you know, high quality, very museum quality type, quickly, efficiently. 4.5 years of life of sculpting, 4.5 years then of sculpting this at the monumental scale. This is a real miracle that this is going to happen now.
Sabin, that sounds awesome. And all I can say is I can't wait to see it. We're out of time. Do you have a final comment you'd like to make?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I learned from this project was to be in service of something larger than yourself. And in so doing, you are creating something that is sacred. That's what I've learned from this. And so I'm delivering something that has tremendous value for our country, for soldiers whose task is sacred in itself.
Wow. Thank you. That's a fantastic statement. Sabin, thank you. Thank you for your excellent comments, for your time and your skills in creating this wonderful and really needed monument.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. This concludes the first hour of the show. We're going to start the second hour talking with Army vet Scott Venema about he'll tell his story. Adam Malone will discuss getting our nation food independent again, and General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Of course, we'll conclude with our military history and the self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 40 good ones, maybe 20 push-ups. Grab some protein, rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.